Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Mona Shaw, how are you doing today?
I'm very well, Mark.
I'm glad to hear it. Well, I know transferring currency is a big issue. It's a common hot topic, and I know you deal with that a lot, right?
Right. Not just us. It's all attorneys who deal with EB-5 mm-hmm. because transferring currency out of certain countries is really becoming more and more difficult, Mark. You know, lately, it's China. You know, last month, I believe it was right at the beginning of July of this year, the Chinese Central Bank made it even more difficult. They came out with another directive to make banks and financial institutions basically liable for doing anything that would allow a person who usually used to use the 10-friend method, bringing more complications to that. So the big issue with China right now is that it's getting harder and harder to transfer money
right
out of China.
And that 10-friend issue or that 10-friend solution you're talking about is essentially 10 people transferring $50K for the $500,000 investment. Right.
That's right, because in China, you're restricted to 50,000 per person. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot, because in some other countries, like Vietnam, it's $16 per person.
$16. That is incredibly low. And I know India, there's a 250,000 limit. It's still a limit. It's, obviously five times greater than that of China. But China, Vietnam, and India, they're not the only countries that have these limits. So I know you've been doing some research on, technological alternatives, right?
Well, yes and no. Well, we have a great guest today who's going to talk about it. But what we wanted to talk about today is whether or not cryptocurrency is actually a solution for transferring currency.
So that's what we're going to be exploring. Is cryptocurrency the solution? We're not saying it is or isn't yet.
Well, we're going to chat about it.
Exactly. So, Mona, we've mentioned cryptocurrency. What is cryptocurrency?
Well, cryptocurrency is basically a digital asset that is used in the form of an electronic payment. And I think our guest today is able to really go into detail about this a little more.
That's right. Today we are joined by Des Landon of Crypt Brokers. Des entered the trading world with the Forex and futures market in 2009. Today he works with blockchain technology and liquid supplies of cryptocurrencies such as Bitcoin. Des, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Mark and Mona. Good to be here.
Des, well, thank you for being on the show today. And this is a hot topic right now. A lot of people are discussing whether or not cryptocurrency could be the new solution to transferring currency. But I believe that your company deals a lot with Bitcoin, correct?
Correct, Mona. Yes. We've been in the industry since 2009, actually starting in China itself with the mining technologies that actually produce cryptocurrencies and the likes of Bitcoin. I won't go into too many technicals right now, but yeah, we've been in the industry for a while, and cryptocurrency is a great alternative to those transfers because the fees are very low and it's quite quick.
Right. And at the same time, with cryptocurrency, it's not regulated in the usual way that you have normal regulations. But perhaps because, you know, our listeners are really confused, might be confused as to what is cryptocurrency. And I just kind of said just now that it was a digital asset that's used in the form of electronic payment, but that you would give a better definition.
That's why he's here.
Yeah, sure. So cryptocurrencies basically is paving the way of the future for money transfers around the world. It gets rid of the banks in some respects, and it's peer-to-peer. So what is peer-to-peer? It means that the community of people that are involved with cryptocurrencies utilize these currencies, getting rid of that third party, which is the banking system, i.e. it makes the transfers more quickly and more cost-efficient.
Right. But as I understand it, cryptocurrency is not subject to the banking regulations and verification procedures, which is normally required. So that's obviously one of the reasons it's so much faster. But does this reduce transaction costs? And is this mean that the actual currency is less trusted?
In some cases, yes, and in some cases, no. It depends who you are as a person or a company and why you're utilizing cryptocurrency for a start. Re-regulations with cryptocurrency, it depends on the government and how you're going to put your money into it or cash out. That just comes to KYC, know your customer. Cryptocurrency is very fresh, and although it's booming around the world and a lot of fresh money is coming in, it's still that unknown dependent on those governments and what they want to do to regulate it. But in the case of transferring with fees, it is very small and instantaneous in some respects because it works on what's called a blockchain, and that's the public ledger that defines Bitcoin or cryptocurrency.
Okay, is Bitcoin the same as cryptocurrency does?
So Bitcoin is one cryptocurrency of many. There are many cryptocurrencies out there, and there is a lot coming out because you can have different cryptocurrencies for different industries or different companies will set up different blockchains. The blockchain is the technology that surrounds cryptocurrencies. Without the blockchain, you wouldn't have cryptocurrencies.
So how would it work if our investors sitting in China and they wanted to utilize Bitcoin? I mean, let's take our listener through this step by step.
Okay. The normal process your client in China would be to submit their money to the bank that they're holding into bank and do an internet transfer to, say, the US of A. And that takes time, and obviously there's limits. In regards to Bitcoin, to purchase that, they would send money to the company in China, which would look at the currency rate for the RMB to Bitcoin and then transfer that amount into what's called a wallet, like on your phone, a phone app, which holds this Bitcoin. They would then transfer that money to another Bitcoin address or wallet, and that would be sent instantaneously to someone in the, say, the United States. Then they could just transfer that money, that Bitcoin, to another exchange and cash out as USD funds.
Right, well, that sounds very simple, but I'm sure there's a lot of complications. I have to say that we have clients who have invested in Bitcoin and made a lot of money out of it and utilized that money for EB5 investments as well as other investments. But how safe is it right now for somebody in China? I mean, what are the rates that you would have with the RMB?
With the RMB, it's speculative, like it goes on the exchange rate, just as if you were locking in a USD rate to send your RMB over to the United States, same process. Now, cryptocurrency is highly volatile. You could be on the underside of that or on the higher side of it. Obviously, it's booming in price at this moment in time, but that boom in price can also go down a considerable amount as well. So it depends. But since the transactions are quite quick, you get rid of the international transfer waiting time as well with a normal bank transfer. So it would just depend on the client's timing and what price they bought and what happens to the market during that period of time, and then to obviously cash out on the other side.
Yeah, but how would the investor trust the fact that they would actually get their value, money's value? What is there in place to really safeguard their money?
A safeguard, of course, there would be agreement in the regards to transferring these funds, but on the other side, it goes off the exchange price, and most exchange prices are at the same price. So in regards to keeping their money safe, as in for the transfer, that's very simple because it would be the exchange price cashing on the other end. In regards to keeping their money safe from transferring, Bitcoin, as I said, works on the public ledger, the blockchain, and nothing can be changed. No double transactions or anything like that. You can't hack into the blockchain. Everything that goes on there is fixed for life. So that's how it would be secure for them.
Right. I do understand that here in the United States, Bitcoin is recognized by the what's called Commodity Futures Trading Commission as a commodity, and it's actually taxed as property by the IRS. But I am not sure yet, and I know we are looking into all of this, as to how the banks would regulate transactions handled in Bitcoin. Are you able to shed any light on that?
In the USA, regulatory-wise, it's different from state to state. So it would be dependent on where the funds are actually arriving. Now, we work out of Delaware and Chicago and a few other states. So cashing out your Bitcoin would just simply go into that company's holding account and then transferred to the designated bank account for your clients.
So basically what you're saying is that as Bitcoin is digital money and obviously used for the secure and instant transfer of value, it's really not controlled or issued by any central bank like a federal bank, right?
No, and that's the good thing about it, because it's peer-to-peer. It's individuals and groups that aren't in the banking community or governments that control and form this community of people to transfer these funds. So in essence, Mona, you can say that it is a worldwide currency, because it's not affiliated or it's not sanctioned by any one corporation, bank or government around the world. It's a free citizen's money, basically.
Right. Well, you're really knowledgeable in all this, Des. How long have you been dealing with Bitcoin?
I got started in 2009 when Bitcoin first started and made my first purchase back then, obviously going down, in 2017 now, so that was a while ago. it's been a lovely ride, so to speak, and obviously with my technical background, I looked into it and it fitted the profile of what I was looking for, and I bought a little bit and it turned into a lot.
So Des, obviously you have a lot of experience with cryptocurrencies and specifically Bitcoin. And I realize that Crypt Brokers is it's a new company. You've been doing this a while, but the company itself is pretty new. What prompted you to start it?
Okay, so yes, I have been in the industry for a while, and Crypt Brokers is basically started for the Americans, the American industry. We go through our supply of Bitcoin, which comes from China, and it goes through separate routes around the world. So basically, an avenue to support our US clients, our high net worth clients, we had to establish a business there. Now, I've been in the crypto world as in business-wise for the last 3 years, and it's growing very strongly. And so basically, the customers needed it, so we set it up in the US of A.
Oh, okay.
Des, are you in any other countries other than China? Because, cryptocurrency is needed not just in China, but in countries like Bangladesh, Vietnam, Iran.
Correct. Cryptocurrency helps those people in not only like for high net worth people and transferring monies, but also those poorer undeveloped countries, which, you know, may not actually have a bank account, but have a Nokia mobile phone. And so they can send transfers that way as well without utilizing the bank. So where are we located around the world? Well, Crypt Brokers is located in Dubai, Hong Kong, Singapore, China, USA, Australia, New Zealand, amongst a few more. And in regards to transferring Bitcoin itself, you can do that anywhere around the world as long as you have internet connection and a phone.
Well, let's explore that a little bit more. So Crypt Brokers, you're essentially a broker for things like Bitcoin. So I know investors can buy Bitcoins themselves through various cryptocurrency exchanges, but you know, what's the benefit in working with a broker? Or can you lay out the process for us simply?
Okay. Well, in essence, a broker really controls the sale. But in our case, we're a wholesale broker. As I said, I've been in this industry since 2009. And so the major supply of BTC, which is Bitcoin or cryptocurrencies, come from those mining farms, what we call mining farms, big warehouses that use all their computer technology to pump out a coin. And they're located in China. So going through us, we are connected with them and we can get wholesale rates. So when a client needs a large sum, they wouldn't go retail, as into, I won't mention company names, we might cut that out. So we supply large sums of Bitcoin at a considerable discounted rate. Well, as close to spot price as possible.
So for example, today, Bitcoin is valued at around 4,000, a little over 4,000 US dollars today. Would your rate be similar to that? And how's it different than some of the exchanges?
Okay, so simply going off that, in America, you have what's retail, and you can purchase with a credit card, but that has limits to, say, $8,000 a day, which isn't conducive for the customer, especially mm-hmm. with people wanting to invest more into the cryptocurrency space, because there's a lot. It's not just BTC or Bitcoin that's booming. There's a lot of others. So we supply the Bitcoin to all the exchanges, hence why we sell at this rate.
Oh, I see. So it's less about the rates, and it seems like it's more about the quantities, right? Because obviously $8,000 wouldn't work within the EB5 realm that we're talking about. But it sounds like you have access to larger quantities that would make it easier to use Bitcoin as a vehicle if Bitcoin was an appropriate vehicle to use for an investment transfer.
Yes, of course, we're very liquid. Basically, the Chinese started mining so much in 2009 that we have 70% of the supply of cryptocurrency around the world for Bitcoin. So we supply all the major exchanges around the world. That's in Europe, the United States, Australia, Asia.
Des, I realize that the value of a Bitcoin is not really tied or pegged to the value of any other currency. And similar to stocks or property, the values are determined by buying and selling in the open market. But what, in your experience, causes the rate to fluctuate?
Well, we are talking about a stock market here, but it's different. It's not correlated with the USD or any currency as such. It might be partnered with it for the price of BTC at this moment, like, as in you said, 4K. But in regards to what moves and shakes this market, it could be a few factors as well. Now, this space is growing so much. And one of the reasons, Mona, is a lot of people are getting to know about Bitcoin and cryptocurrency and what it is. And it's a little bit exciting. It's new for them. And so they might be putting a few hundred dollars in, or a couple of thousand to a million. You have also what's called in this space ICOs, which is called initial coin offering. And that's like other businesses starting their own coin like Bitcoin. Now, to get into those, you need to buy Bitcoin first or another cryptocurrency called Ethereum.
Ethereum, now, right. Yes.
Exactly. And that started as an ICO as well, like an IPO, you know, when you're going to buy a stock before it goes public. That's basically what an ICO is. But why I'm saying all of this is all this new money is coming into this marketplace, and then it's coming into Bitcoin or Ethereum, and then it's basically spreading the love into all these other ICOs. So that's why this marketplace is growing so big and becoming so dynamic in that respect. It's just growing. And with that, obviously, comes the fluctuations in price. It comes down to supply and demand, basically.
So if we have a client who is very interested in utilizing Bitcoin to transfer out of their own country, they could contact a company like yourself, like CryptBrokers, but how would they establish a bank account, or would they need to establish a bank account here in the United States for the money to be transferred?
That's a good question, Mona. So let's paint a hypothetical picture. For example, if there is a Chinese high net worth individual, a potential EB-5 investor that wants to, well, invest in a EB-5 opportunity here in the United States, and obviously they have these currency restrictions, but they would look at Bitcoin not so much as an investment to put their money in and hold it in Bitcoin and, you know, go with the fluctuations or potential rise in the investment, but they want to use it as a conduit to essentially buy that digital asset and then liquidate that digital asset in America to then use those funds to invest in the domestic regional center. How does that work?
The process is very easy. Basically, what they would do is, well, firstly, they'd have to set up a Bitcoin wallet, and we can certainly sort them out with that, whether they have a PC, like a computer, or their mobile phone. They can set up a wallet utilizing that. They'd then just transfer the money to our designated business account in China using their RMB, and then we would facilitate the price of the exchange rate at the time for BTC as close to spot as possible. We'd then transfer them the BTC to that wallet they established. They'd then get the address from the US, like a little bank account name and number, and put that into their wallet and just press the amount they want to send, press that send button, confirm it, and then it would be sent through what's called that blockchain ledger I spoke about. So basically what happens there, it just goes through all the computers that are connected on the blockchain until it hits the other address. And then once it hits the address, we close them out at that other exchange rate. And then that will go into a bank account, the holding account for the exchange. And then we can on-send it to that designated bank account that they wish to send it to with their reference number or any item.
Des, what happens if they didn't have a bank account in the United States? Say they have a bank account elsewhere in the world. Is possible to transfer it to other countries? Say they have a bank account in Singapore or Hong Kong?
Yeah, sure. All we would ask from the exchange is that they had KYC to make things safe for the client and, of course, us, the company. And what is KYC? That's know your customer. So just ID, normal ID requirements that any bank would accept for an international transfer. But Mona, like, they can do whatever they want with their money. They can send it wherever they want. So Bitcoin, they can transfer to someone in Antarctica, for example, as long as they had internet connection. but I don't think there's any banks in Antarctica.
Well, obviously, the first question which comes up is that would USCIS accept this as a legitimate transfer? And I think that the answer to that is because we don't know. We have not got any guidance from USCIS. And I don't believe there has been anything like this done yet for USCIS really to come down and give their decision on. But if it's a legitimate form of transfer, there are many other forms of transfer which, you know, it's like this. If you use the 10 friends, for example, I don't see why they would not accept it. It sounds as legitimate as the other to me.
So, Mona, what you're saying is it's new. You haven't done it. Maybe no one else has done it before either, but you don't foresee any type of source of fund challenges?
I don't think that USCIS is the biggest challenge. I feel that if there is going to be a challenge to Bitcoin, it would be from the banking institutions themselves. Mm-hmm. For example, if the money had to go into an escrow account held by one of the banks, perhaps that bank would not accept the money coming in through Bitcoin.
Well, let's talk about that and explore that a little bit. So, Des, if there is a EB-5 fund or EB-5 project or regional center in the U.S. that wants to be able to, well, take Bitcoin from Chinese investors, what would they need to have on the domestic end?
Good question. That would be dependent on the state they were in. In relation to the client sending the funds, KYC, it's just going to be different from state to state, and I'm not aware of where they're sending these funds.
Let's choose Delaware, since I know you have an office in Delaware.
Okay. So, yeah, in regards to them transacting the transfer from Bitcoin to cash, we can facilitate that and then on-send that to the appropriate party. That's fine by us. Where it goes after that is up to the client. So if that was for an investment property or a $1 million home in Malibu, or, you know, to set up a corporation in Orlando, Florida, that's perfectly up to the client to do that. In regards to EB-5, we would just have to look a little bit more in depth and make sure our clients are safe too.
Right.
I foresee actually, Mark, that if people did decide to use Bitcoin, that they may just not go through escrow if the banks haven't approved it. But if it's a legitimately, you know, if it's a legitimate source of transferring money, then they would just transfer it directly into the project. Because from our knowledge, people are getting desperate. They do want to utilize EB-5. They do want to do, for example, they want to make transfers before September 30th. And they're facing problems after problems. So people are really looking at any possible way to get money out of their country.
That's a good point that you bring up. I didn't even think of escrow. I was just thinking of the simplicity of a potential Chinese EB-5 investor wanting to invest money into a regional center here in the United States. I didn't even think about, well, they may want to place that money in escrow while their 526 is processing, but maybe that avenue isn't possible yet with Bitcoin.
Mono, well, I think banks... Sorry.
Well, I was just going to ask you, what would need to be in place in order for that to happen? Maybe it's in place now, or maybe there's some signs that we can look for that somebody would be able to use Bitcoin to put their initial investment in escrow.
Well, prior to this podcast, I did have a word with Signature Bank, which is one of the largest banks for EB-5. And at this point, they would not accept Bitcoin, but they are looking into it with their regulators, et cetera, to see if there's anything that could be done. I do see that banks would face a problem because their regulations have become so strict, and they don't dare really do anything which is in breach or violation of the regulations, because then there are so many consequences to that. So I do see that this is going to be an issue. If somebody is going to use Bitcoin, they may try and do it without using an escrow account at all, and perhaps putting their money directly into the project.
Des, could crypt brokers somehow take the Bitcoin into America and then that gets transferred into U.S. money, and then that money could then go into escrow into the escrow bank of the investor's choosing?
Of course. Very simple process our end. All we need to do is just transfer that Bitcoin at the exchange and then have a designated bank account in the US or anywhere around the world for that matter. The client, for example, could transfer their Bitcoin from China. We could cash it out for them in the US of A at our exchange and then wire transfer it to Australia. So whether it's a domestic bank account or international, it's very easy on our side.
There is a proviso there. There is a proviso there, though, Des. For source of funds, it has to come from the personal account of the investor. So you would basically have to I would not see it working if you basically put it directly into the project without it first going through the investor's personal account.
Well, let me ask you both this. Des and Mona, could you somehow use the blockchain ledger to show that this investor had bought this this cryptocurrency at, you know, this price and this quantity, and then this price and this quantity for this investor was then transferred, created into domestic money through a broker and then into an escrow fund? Could the broker and the source of funds come together that way?
Yes, of course.
Yes, and Mona. I know you would do the work, Mona. So what would be the challenge for you?
Well, I have a question for Des. Des, the only time that USCIS would definitely deny a transfer like this is if there was an opportunity, for example, to do any money laundering in between. When we are doing source of funds, for example, we're very specific on what is the source of funds is, but at the same time, we've also have to detail the path of funds. So we have to show exactly how the money reached the United States and that during that path, there was really no opportunity for anybody else to, say, exchange the money and slip black money or poppy seed money or something of that nature in. So how could you ensure that the Bitcoin, which was put in by the investor, stayed the same and it wasn't, say, transferred out for bad money?
Yeah, exactly right. Well, we'd go back to a normal banking scenario where the client would go to their bank in China and fill out the, wire transfer for the United States. Basically, for Bitcoin, it's the same process on our side. So they'd be going to the bank and then transferring the money to our business designated account in China. Therefore, there's the first paper trail. We know where the funds have come from the client. It would be then changed at the exchange to their BTC address. So that Bitcoin wallet would have to be the same as the client submitting the money to the exchange. So there's the tick in the box for where the funds have come from, the original ones. It would then be sent to the United States. They would do that transfer through the Bitcoin wallet. We would then receive it at the exchange, noting that on the exchange side, we would already have their ID and all those compliant reasons that the bank transfer in China is basically the same as the ID on the other side at the exchange in the US of A. We'd then close out their Bitcoin for USD, using the same KYC and same information, and then on send it to that person's designated bank account, which of course would have to be in their name in that respect. So that's where the paper trail lies.
And how much could potentially somebody send? I mean, is there a limit to how much, for example, your broker would be able to handle?
There are no limits with us. We are very liquid. As I said before, we have about 70% of the supply in the world.
That's a lot of Bitcoin.
That is. No, we are very liquid and we can accommodate $5,000 to $50 million to $100 million to $500 million. It really doesn't matter.
Well, Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies have been around for a few years, but their popularity certainly has been increasing as of late. Does Bitcoin or other cryptocurrencies, is that a good vehicle for transfers across different countries? Well, maybe, but it could also be a source of funds issue. But perhaps with brokers and attorneys getting together, they could figure it out.
Well, I really hope so, Mark, because we really need to figure this out. We need to do two things to keep EB5 alive. One is increase the visas, and two is to find a solution to the difficulties in transferring currency.
I agree with that. And perhaps Bitcoin is a solution. Des, thank you so much for coming on EB5 Investment Voice and exploring Bitcoin with us.
Thank you very much for having me. Appreciate it.
And Des, before we let you go, where can people find you and learn more about Cryptbrokers?
they can just log on to www.cryptbrokers.com.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw and Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.